Today, how are you guys doing? Ain't off fun times of the memes, by the way. It's fun to retweet and send out your funny shit. This is kind of a weird time, so I don't know how many people will show up, but we'll see. Give it a bit. Duke, did you get connected? It's taking a little bit to connect some people. I do think the market is kind of front running the ETF sort of narrative. Just judging by like price trajectories, it looks like everything will moon by like February. It seems like around that time is kind of like the ETF time period. Whether you get a pullback at that point, probably, I would think, but I think from substantially higher prices. So quite a few charts are sort of like lined up almost exactly the same as far as price action. So like there's every, you know, most of the charts are forming kind of like this rising wedge type of pattern. Chainlink, for example, or Dogecoin. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. Everything has the same chart right now in the altcoin space. On different like FIB extensions and time scales and whatever. But obviously like the smaller cap thing is going to move a lot more as liquidity comes in. Zephyr's site has, let me see where we at in terms of followers. Okay. Yeah, it's about 14.8 thousand followers. I don't think too much comes out of the Zephyr protocol's actual Twitter handle. So I'm assuming like most of it is just like you know, just a marker of how many people are actually jumping on the protocol. I think most people who are going to follow the actual protocol probably have a bag. So we're talking about like 15,000 on there versus like, what was it, a few thousand, maybe a few weeks ago, something like that. So really like a maybe a 5x in terms of the number of new users. Looking at kind of like the volume consistently at like $3 million worth, that's pretty good actually for something of this market cap. Kajira, for example, has like a 300 million market cap and it has a very similar volume on any given day. So I think volume's good. Some of that's probably from miners selling and new users coming in and buying, which is fine. You want as much miners selling early as possible in the ecosystem as possible for you know, better bullish price action later. You don't want to have too many people that are like bystanders or like tourists or whatever who are going to come in, ride a quick pump and then go. So you want those people to sell as fast as possible, ideally. But getting good hash rates on miner at this point, I think I'm like averaging like 15 to 16 thousand kilohash per second, which I think is pretty decent. I think I should be able to pull like, I'm guessing like if hash rate stays around this level, which I think, it probably should. I don't think hash rate's going to dramatically increase unless a whole bunch more Monero miners move over. I think hash rate will probably stay stable over the next year between like 1.5 to 2.5 giga hash per second. Why do I think that? It's because like Monero has been around forever and it has 2.5 giga hash per second. Also CPU mining gets considerably pricier as the difficulty goes up, and that kind of keeps things in check. I think that's good because it allows for more like retail miners to jump in and make a few bucks. I think you could probably pay off the cost of a miner within about a year or less at this rate. So I think it's basically a free computer essentially, if you mine this thing. So, and I think it's better if like actual users mine for themselves, like get like one or two computers running. And the reason for that is because it's just better for the security of the network, and it's better for decentralization if more individuals are mining. And since it is like the most lucrative time to do so, it's probably not a bad idea to do it. Pretty easy to set up overall. I think it requires a little bit of technical skill in the sense that, like, if you've never put together a computer before, you know, it's like building a Lego set. You're going to have to take a little time to sort of put that all together, get it to work right, make sure the memory chips are stuck in correctly and like click into place. It's fairly straightforward. Like I said yesterday, I ordered one more miner. I think I made a mistake buying the 7900X chip, which was like $380. I think the better buy is like $520 or $530, and that was the 7950X. So the AMD Ryzen 7950X is the one you want. Because like if you just divide the number of so on these chips, if you divide the number of threads, which is very important for CPU mining, you want the most threads possible for the price. And if you look at the sort of thread count, you can just basically do a calculation that's pretty simple. You take the price of the chip and you divide it by the number of threads. So like I think the 7900 has a $16 per thread price. The 7950 has a $17 per thread price. But remember, you also have to pay for all the other shit, like the mounting hardware, the motherboard, the RAM or whatever. And all that stuff's going to run you probably like easily like a couple hundred bucks, especially if you're getting the really cheap shit. If you go for the more expensive stuff, it goes up from there. At these chip levels, because you're talking about AMD5 motherboards. And I made the mistake previously buying the cheapest motherboard, which was fine, except that you can't overclock it as well. So I went to a little bit higher motherboard this time around. And so the second rig cost me more. It's like, I think I paid like close to 900-ish, but it's just basically a more useful computer long-term. I also spent like more on hard drive and everything else to get just a better computer this time. With the mining gear, like the thing to keep in mind is if you are spending the money on the chip and you get a little bit like higher thread count for not much extra money, remember, like, because you have to pay for all the other stuff that's to build the computer, there's a sort of a sweet spot as far as like the miner that you want. And I think the 7950 is that sweet spot. When you go to higher level chips beyond that, things get appreciably more expensive with like the price per thread going up, but you also get into like issues where you get into like much higher level chips like AMD EPYC chips and stuff, and these things require different motherboards and all of that. So I think the sweet spot is right around the 7950 if you want a working computer. Long term, if you're kind of like whatever, you just want the cheapest miner possible, then the 3000 series AMD chips are still fine. Hey, up, how's it going, man?
Good. I didn't even know I requested to speak.
That's all right. But I ordered another rig, and this is with the 7950. And I think the compared to the 7900, it's the better deal. When you look at the entire cost of the PC put together,
yeah, it's only like adding like $100 or something, right, for like six more cores or whatever it is.
Yeah, not even $100 because it's like 16 threads, $16 a thread for the 7900, and it's for the 7950, it's $17 a thread, but you get like a lot more threads on one chip. But the beauty of it is not just the thread price per thread, but also the fact that like it scales better with the other equipment, right? Because your chip is not the only thing you're buying. You wind up having to buy all the other shit that goes with it. So I think it's a good deal. The 7950 is kind of, I think, the option that people should probably be considering if they're going this route. And then you really, with one rig, you're mining quite a bit. I mean, you're probably mining like, I think at stabilized difficulty, I think you're probably going to mine like 1.5 ZEF per month, I think is going to be the long-term relative average. because it'll like right now, like there's kind of a gold rush for it. So everyone's like aiming their CPUs at this. But I think difficulty will sort of settle in, I think, similar to Monero. And I think you'll probably be able to pull like 1.2 to 1.5 ZEF per month, is what I'm guessing. And yeah. at current price, that's a pretty decent amount of money as far as like repaying your computer.
Yeah, I have a 3950 and a 3900, and they definitely get a little more hash. I think like the 3950 I have hashes at like 15, and this is undervolted. I could do a lot more, but this is just efficient. But it's at like 15,000 hashes per second, and like the 3900 is at 13.33, so it's like 1.7.
Yeah, my 7900 is pulling like 15.4 right now.
Yeah. I'm just saying in terms of like the 3 series, the 7 series is probably you're going to get more, is what I'm saying. I don't know how much more. I'm very curious though, because I was looking at buying a 7 series, and then when I saw you say that you bought the 7950, I thought, well, I'll just wait for him to hook it up and see what the difference is.
The other thing I did was like I got the last time I picked up just really cheap Corsair DDR5
bought the 5600 instead of the 6000, right?
Yeah, and this time I bought the 6000. I bought the
you can overclock your RAM too, right? Like even past your XMP or the Expo profile.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure what the right settings were to fuck around with it. Do you think it's worth it, or it's like?
So I do. What you should do is if you're gonna, so there's a setting on your keyboard that's called like, I think it's called like memories, like try it or something like that, or I don't know what the trademark name is that they have for it, but basically it gives you a bunch of preset profiles. And what you want to do is you want to select the, so it's all about time. RAM is all about timings, like the timing on the RAM chip itself or the chips. And whatever your like timing is set as, like if it's like 38, 38, 38, and then the last one's like 105 or whatever that is.
Right.
When you up it past the Expo profile, just choose the same timings. So if you're at like 5600 at that 38, 38, 38, 95 or whatever it is.
Okay.
Like so go to like 6000. Yeah, go to 6000 with the same timings.
Okay, so you up the. So
you
like
up the megahertz, but you keep the same timings.
Got it.
Long story short.
The other thing I did differently this time was I had kind of like the piece of shittiest motherboard, I think, for an AMD 5 series motherboard. So this time I picked up a little bit higher level one, I think a 650, they call it. And I think that chipset will have a little bit more overclocking options and whatnot too.
It'll have more on the RAM side. Like you might be able to go from like 6,000 to like maybe 7,000 or something. But
yeah,
honestly, I use like a 4 series board, which people say is not as capable as a 5 series board. And because we're mining, like,
right,
as long as you can do the, as long as you can like do undervolt or overvolt and lock cores and do all that kind of stuff, like, I don't necessarily know you're going to get much.
On the other hand, like, it might have been too. I may have spent too much money because, like the new motherboard, it has a 650 type chipset instead of like the 630. I think my other one has, or whatever that number is.
Oh, okay.
The negative was that it cost like almost double to get there. So it's like you went from like a $75 motherboard to like a $150 one. So it's highly dubious whether that's worth it. But I figured
that's not too bad. I don't think you screwed up. Because you could get like $200, $400. Like once you get into these AM5 platforms, like the motherboards get pretty extreme on some of them.
They jump, yeah. So this was kind of the value model that I kind of found that was kind of an in-between. And I think what I'm going to do with this is, like this one I built is like an actual computer. Again, I want to make this a usable maybe gaming computer or something in the future. So I figured like get a half-decent motherboard and that can support like, and then this one I actually bought a case for too, so that if I want to like just run it as a computer later, I've got it all set up instead of like having the, you know, because like realistically, like these do a pretty good job warming up about one room in terms of temperature. So
yeah,
like,
yeah, they do great for that. But one, they're about like you said, it's like 150 watt heater, basically.
Right, it's like 150 watt heater. So like you can basically pop one of these per room if you have like a room you want to heat up, or maybe like heat up the garage. So I think like one in the garage, one in a couple of rooms upstairs where it gets colder. I have a heated floor in our house. I have a hydronically heated floor. It's like a water pump system in the concrete. Yeah. And so it's super high efficiency warming, but like we have it in the first floor of our house, but we don't have it in the second. So what's interesting about this is that having the miners upstairs actually helps warm the upper part of the house a little bit. So it's kind of an added benefit, like as a space heater, like an expensive space heater.
If you buy any more motherboards too, one of the things that you want to look for that's kind of equally important is the heat sink. Like there are like the heat spreader, or the heat sinks that are on yes. the VRM.
Yeah,
like that's what's because we're throwing like 140 TDP like watts at these. Like most chips are like 65 watts or 105, but these 7900s or the 7950s run at like 140. They're like, you know, you're pushing more watts through the VRM is what I'm saying. So like that's okay. if you're gonna spend money on or like try to find a motherboard that's geared for this type of mining, it'd be better to find one that has like good VRM heat sinks or spreaders on it.
This has better spreaders than the others because they have a lot of like cute little like metal objects on it with like neat little logos on them.
I think that's fins and like radiator looking like things or whatever. Like heat spreaders,
exactly.
Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's where the extra cost comes in, is they add a bunch of shit and they like up market it and charge upwards.
Exactly.
So and then the
cheap boards won't have anything. They'll just have like the VRMs will be open and exposed. And that they work, but like. There's
the cheapest
not going to
motherboard also doesn't have Wi-Fi on it. So like the if you want a computer with Wi-Fi built in, like Wi-Fi 6 in particular, the latest latest Wi-Fi, then the motherboards at that point for AMD 5 level motherboards started about $150, something like that. So these are sort of like just general features for people to look out for, I think, on these boards. This time I bought a more of like a more gaming level SSD also. I think this is the computer I'm going to put Windows on. The other one I'm going to just flash the SSD you told me to buy in the first place, which is that cheap one, and then use that for the actual mining rig, and then this one for an actual PC. So now that I've kind of like figured out which, you know, like wasted some money figuring out which one to buy.
Did you already buy your SSD for the new one?
I did, yeah.
Did you get PCIe 4 or 5?
5, I think.
Okay, good. I was going to say, if you're getting the AM5 7 Series platform, you might as well go PCIe 5 so that you can get that increased speed.
Right. Yeah, and that's not so much for mining, but just for general use, right?
For gaming and stuff, yeah. It's not, like, you wouldn't see any difference on anything on mining or any, like, most things you're not going to see a difference from 4 to 5, but if you're upgrading the platform, you might as well get the latest stuff.
Yep. Anyway.
But it goes from like 3,000 megabytes per second to like 8,000. And once you get over 1,000, like humans are not going to be able to, you're not going to notice much of difference.
You're not going to notice, yeah. Stuff you don't. Yeah, they've improved a lot lately.
Yeah.
So just for everyone's reference, we're just talking about mining Zephyr a little bit. We were I was just kind of filling in folks on like the kind of hardware that I picked up and how I'm doing it. It's pretty straightforward. And I think I think I'm going to easily be able to pay for the price of the computer over the course of like maybe 6 months to a year, depending on the price of Zeph. I think because we're in a bullish market and there's like this ETF approval thing that looks probable by like January, February, like I think the market is sort of front running in terms of cash flow going into crypto and stuff. My theory is that there might be like a pullback around the time of the ETF, just because like it's like a sell the news event. So I think the market is sort of front running price action, especially because it's like holidays, Christmas time, and also the stock market's up a little bit. So I think there's just kind of like this general sort of a little bit of a trend towards bullishness for the next few months. Also, the charts look pretty good for a few months. Like if you look at Bellwether's like Link and you look at some of the other charts, like for example, I think trajectory wise, Link could probably hit all time high within like 3 months, like within by February, even in terms of current trajectory, in terms of speed. I know it feels weird because like you'll have like the price move up really fast within a few days and then it'll taper out for, you know, like a few weeks, move really fast for a few days, taper out. So don't get shaken out by the, you have to be patient during those like intermediate times. Like Zephyr, for example, did this, like where you have this big run up. It's called a markup period where the price just skyrockets from like $6 to $55, $52. And then it pulls back to 24 or so and then goes sideways. Now it's like 35. And then all of a sudden you'll just see things just go up and away. So you have to be careful with thinking you're going to catch that upswing. During these consolidation periods, it's a reasonable time to just either DCA or just get a bag and hold or whatever. But it's important to sort of realize that like the overall market is in an uptrend. I mean, almost every altcoin has 50-day moving average crosses in play already. really for the second time, because we had one, some of the coins had 50-day moving average crosses, 50-day crossing the 200 like golden crosses like earlier in the bear market. And then like, this is the second time we're getting crosses. Usually like you get these scam crosses in the middle of a bear market. It's pretty common. It's happened every time, almost like one or two of those. But now I think like there's enough flattening of the altcoin space over the past 2.5 years that like more likely up than down is my thesis. And in that context, like almost all bullish charts are going to stay bullish continuation, if I had to guess. And especially with halving for Bitcoin also coming in around April or so. Yeah, everything's sort of pushing in the right direction as far as meme effects. You got halving, you have like ETF approval for Bitcoin, whatever else. So, and then also like a lot of different charts like ETH and whatever are at sort of like resistance and ready to break out. Even like old school coins like Dogecoin, Ethereum, whatever, everything's sort of at that like kind of breakout level. So I think like whatever bags you're going to have, you should probably pack them for the trip. But anyway, yeah, like with Zephyr, I think the, like right now we're at sub 100 million market cap. And I think like the narrative that should be really sort of established is what I posted at the top is like what, this is kind of a new world where privacy is going to be more important. You have two problems in the new world. You have one problem is truth, which I think projects like Chainlink are looking at solving in terms of on-chain truth in the open blockchains, the non-privacy blockchains. And Chainlink is clearly like the leader in there. And there's kind of these narratives that, oh, Pith is the next best thing or whatever. It's not even close yet as far as like what Chainlink does. What it requires to create real world verification and oracles from a truth perspective is you need to have like lots of partnerships with real world companies, not just API access for price feeds, but like actual partnerships so that you can verify what assets they have or don't have and put them on chain. So a lot of banks and whatnot are working with Chainlink for the next few years. So if you were talking about the truth, oracle, real world asset sort of narrative, I think that's Chainlink. And really nothing else comes close from that perspective, regardless of what you read about Pith or whatever. That can also go up, by the way, but I'm not saying it won't, but like from a clear sort of like bull market run up, I think Chainlink's my bet for like a good 10x from here. Probably will hit like, you know, two fib extensions above its prior high this time. And I think it can reach that kind of 140 level. It's one of the few coins like in the crypto space that has really, really solid narratives. And then the other coin like that's like, and that's at the high market cap level, right? Like that's at market cap number 12. What's beautiful about Zephyr is it's like in the, like when we got into it is like, you know, in the, you know, like, you know, under 1,000 market cap or something. And now it's up to like the 300 to 400 level market cap rank. And its market cap is sub 100 million. And the narratives for it are sort of like the opposite of Chainlink in many ways. It's like, again, it's a story of self-custody. It's a story of privacy since it's a Monero fork essentially. And it's like, and it'd be fine to get Monero, obviously it works. And that's an option as far as if you want a fairly liquid privacy coin. But the thing is, the market cap is much higher. Its upside potential is not nearly as good. So like Zephyr seems to be like the better like upside play if I were to make one. I don't own any Monero. So like I don't have a skin in that game either way. I think it's a good project. It works and people use it. But I think at this point, like Zephyr has the more like immediate upside. Along with that, like the big narratives, like if truth is Chainlink's narrative and privacy is Zephyr's narrative, both are kind of like AI narratives in a sense, because AI, as you've seen, is making up a bunch of shit, like making up articles, making up, you know, text, making up images, and like nobody knows what's going to be real anymore. So the need for oracles is going to skyrocket as like trying to prove that your particular project, your particular news article, your particular image is the real one or represents reality is going to be a tricky thing. So the truth narrative is straightforward. I think the opposite problem is true of AI also, in that like AI can, while it can create all sorts of new shit, it can also create all sorts of new threat vectors. It can create all sorts of fake things that can attack you it can kind of read blockchains and figure out whose assets are whose and like do like outlandish on-chain analysis. Basically AI is going to be used by folks like intelligence agencies and everybody else to basically take strategies that people have come up with to analyze blockchains and, you know, figure out whose money is where and what they're doing with it and everything else. So that's going to be an interesting thing. And you wind up having like weird things happen where cross-chain analysis can lead to you being pinned for some sort of crime you didn't do. And that's going to be a tricky problem. So let's say, for example, Tornado Cash was found to be a place where like bad actors are hanging out for some reason. Then what can happen is someone can dust your wallet with Ethereum that came out of Tornado Cash and then claim that you're a bad guy. So you can pin also, but the problem with public ledgers is you can technically pin crimes on people fairly readily. So like you could blackmail people and do all sorts of wacky shit. Because by the time like someone has been pinned with a crime that you know, oh, look, it says on chain that you got this money from somewhere. You know, like it becomes kind of tricky because like in a bank account, if you were to receive $10,000, it's immediately going to flag certain services, Homeland Security, whatever, like certain amounts of money that hit your bank account or leave your bank account in particular in cash. Like that privacy is being monitored. Your assets are being monitored to see if you're doing any nefarious shit. But with on-chain stuff, when everything being open, it makes it even harder because someone who wants to pin a crime on you, let's say, for example, for political ends or some other bullshit, they can actually send you money, stick it in your on-chain ledger, and then have it tied to various nefarious shit, and then wind up like, getting in trouble. So that's an interesting like attack vector problem. It's going to be a lot more though, in terms of AI related crime and like manipulation and whatever. And I think Zephyr is interesting because it represents another option for privacy. I do think like many privacy coins may catch a bid as a result of this, not just Zephyr. So just kind of put that out there, but Zephyr's market cap is much lower. So if I want to have a bag of something that goes up a lot and I want it to be private indefinitely, like this is a good place to kind of store some emergency cash for a rainy day, I think. And then the benefit on additionally is like, if I want to convert to like a stable in the form of ZSD, I can do so in my wallet. There's some fees involved, but I can do so in my wallet and have that private cash available in case I want to pay someone or like, use it on future exchanges and whatnot, that might emerge that have, ZSD and who have, ZEF available. So I think like, from an AI side, there's that privacy angle. And then from the CBDC side, which is central bank digital currencies, there's going to be a concern because like as Europe comes out with them and dozens of other countries come out with CBDCs, these are like really problematic in that like the government can essentially watch your every movement and every thing that you buy and track every single metric of what you care about using the flow of your money. And also control what you buy as well. Like, you know, you can put controls on like how much money can be used, when it can be used. If you don't use it in a certain amount of time, it's going to get burned. I mean, it's really like every possible thing you've seen in DeFi, every single tokenomic trick you've seen in airdrops, everything you've seen in terms of weird incentive mechanisms, all of that is at the behest of the government at that point. So any kind of like crypto shenanigans that you're used to can be deployed in a way to sort of control people at a mass level. And I think privacy coins are going to become more exciting as like influencers and whatnot really get into pitching them later on as CBDCs come out. So I think right now nobody cares because, you know, they're not on the horizon, but that's why you're early in this regard. But by next year and the year after that, as CBDCs become more and more like in the public media and the news, then the narrative is going to like pick up, in my opinion. And so AI and CBDCs both result in the need for various privacy coins. And Zephyr does something a lot more interesting than in my view, it does something more interesting than just plain Monero. Monero's plus side is it's got high liquidity and high volume on a daily basis. So you can trade in and out of it at fairly high, high monetary amounts. Zephyr will get there eventually, I think, but its market cap, I think, has a potential to do more than, I think its market cap has a potential to do a lot more than what Monero is now. So if Monero is 3 billion and it's been like 10 billion plus in the past, I think we could spike at 10 billion also. Caspa is a good example, made it to like 3 billion so far, and sort of steadily climbing. It looks like it's ready to break out as well. I think we can easily pull these kinds of numbers. And like, we're so early at 100 million market cap, I'm not even too worried about it, because like, the road to a billion market cap for coins of this type is relatively straightforward, I think. Getting beyond that might be tougher. But by that point, like, the value of our bags is sufficiently high enough that like, we don't care. So like, whatever, right? It goes up, it goes down at that point. You know, what's the difference? You're up ahead, you're fine. And if you wanted to trade out of the thing into ZSD, you could. And you could always like buy the dip by just trading, like converting back from ZSD to ZEF again at some point that you're choosing. So I think it's a fairly good like system. And the earlier you're in it, the more you can take advantage of the very large swing trades anyway. So let's say ZEF like makes another 10x soon, heads off to like 300 million market cap or something like that from here, 400 million. And you want to convert your, you know, to ZSD to kind of like take profit or whatever, like go into stable. You can do so within your wallet, hang out there, not register this transaction anywhere. And then if you get another dip or whatever, you can convert back at some point. So there's some interesting possibilities. And the possibilities are much more straightforward when there's a very high potential upside in terms of like those kinds of swing trades. So it's way more useful to be in this early, and it's way more used to be in this than something else that would also pump 10x. So like, if you have some other thing that you happen to know that's going to pump 10x from here, the thing is, you might be doing that on a centralized exchange or a DEX or an open ledger, and everyone knows about it. And by everyone, you understand who I mean. So like in this, like you could have this happen without anyone knowing if that's what you choose. And it's impossible for someone to scan your wallet and know what's in it, which is really important, I think. Because you don't really want to have a gigantic bag and then not be able to do anything with it. And that's a common problem that Bitcoiners had, early BTC people. Like if Satoshi were to sort of like sign one of his wallets or whatever, the market's going to tank. Like if the Winklevoss twins start moving and selling some of their Bitcoin, the market's going to tank, because then people are going to be like, uh-oh, the big whales are starting to move their money. We're going to have a massive dump, right? So like So the beautiful thing about this being on privacy is that even if you choose to swap between coins, A, you don't have to sell them on the open market. You can just swap to ZSD in your wallet, which is all hidden. And that doesn't affect, you know, price action in any meaningful way for the rest of the market. But simultaneously, you can do the trading exposure by having a trading primitive in the form of ZSD, but you can also exit at various times without anyone knowing which wallet is actually exiting, and therefore causing panic in the actual market. So that's the problem with, I think, open markets like BTC and all of the non-privacy coins, is that like the on-chain information results in alpha for people in terms of trading against you. And do you really want people to have that alpha in trading against you? The answer is clearly no. Like that would be information you'd rather have to yourself. Now, it doesn't matter right now. Like maybe you have $100 worth of ZEF or something. Maybe it doesn't matter. But it might matter if you have $1 million worth of ZEF or 10 million or 100 million. So like this type of tool is more useful for whales in a sense than it is for normies or like small bags. But at the same time, like that's the reason you want to be in early, because it's the whales who are going to realize that this is useful to them. It's as simple as that. Like, do you want whales to buy your bags, or do you, you know, or what? At some point in the future, I think that's what you're going to want. And that's who is going to be likely to use something like this. At sizable scale, I would imagine as well. Like, I think that's highly likely. So just look at the volume on Monero and you get a sense of like the appetite for privacy. It's not gigantic. It's not like Bitcoin level, but for you and me sitting here at 100 million market cap or less, we don't give a shit. Like the reality is, like, it'd be like if you were an early Monero in 2014, do you really care whether you were in Bitcoin or Monero? Because you did really, really well with, you know, tens of thousands of multiples anyway. What do you care at that point? You know, you like it's better being early to something that's very small than it is to be sort of like being midterm in something that's already moderately big. The upside's better, and the privacy element adds a little bit of benefit to you. So these are kind of my theories on this, and like you guys can feel free to chime in. Any kind of new theses or ideas that you've seen from the last few weeks?
No, not really. Everything's been just progressing as, you know, what we thought in terms of like AI and privacy and how important this type of a project is for the not only the crypto sphere, but the tech sphere too. Like Coach is talking about, Bruce is talking about it in terms of what's coming down the road with AI and how they're going to accumulate funds. I didn't even think about that, to be honest. So that's an interesting concept as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of mentioned this in the past too, that I think that the final crypto in the universe is not going to be Bitcoin, like despite what everyone thinks. I think everyone in the world's wrong about this. And what I think they're wrong about is there are several technologies emerging that are going to make that not true. This is why I'm not a Bitcoin maxi necessarily. One, and I'm a substantial investor in, like, you know, companies that do quantum computing, by the way. So it's like, so I have some idea of like where that's going. But one is quantum computing. The other is AI. The combination of those two things can end up creating a very, very different type of decentralization and a very different type of decentralized currency. And one that fuels the power of thought. So cognitive cycles or thought cycles would be the ultimate currency in my view. And you don't want people to know your thoughts. So for example, if you're a human being, do you want people to be able to read your mind? No. If you're an AI handling substantial systems like military systems or like cognitive systems like that might be involved in financial markets or whatever, do you want people to be able to read your mind? No. Do you want to have an open ledger where every transaction you do is on the blockchain? No. So the reality is like corporations are like AIs and they're large autonomous sort of like multi-human creatures, and they behave like in a manner that's not exactly human. But corporations want privacy. Like they don't want everyone to know what they're doing in any given moment. So this is why like open ledger systems, open blockchains really do not solve a lot of problems for corporations, and why you've seen very little crypto uptake. Privacy systems, on the other hand, when it comes to blockchain, are much more difficult to design. And so therefore, you haven't seen very much uptake of those either, like Secret Network and Monero and whatever. They're fairly difficult to design to do well. And privacy also creates problems in terms of like the ability to communicate with one another, in the sense that sometimes you want your wallet to be open, sometimes you want it to be closed in terms of visibility. And then who you might want to open it to show what you have might be very different from depending what day of the week or whatever and who you're interacting with, right? Especially if you want to use privacy coins as collateral, the ability to just like swap between a visible collateral and an invisible one in some kind of meaningful way might be relevant. So like there's a lot of different things that privacy is good for, but AI thoughts, if you can just think about it that way, are, you know, AI is not going to want to have other competitive AIs knowing what it's thinking or what it's buying, what it's transacting on. I'm not saying necessarily, by the way, that Zephyr is the one that's going to be the end all be all for this purpose, but we like it is an option. Like it's a blockchain that could be something that an AI could use for silent transactions, and the ability to do so with a stablecoin is a lot more straightforward to use on any given day, because an AI having to go from a privacy system to a centralized exchange and then back again just doesn't make any sense to go to a stablecoin. So the ability to go swap to a stablecoin or have stablecoins within your wallet that you can use at any given moment that are private is by itself a utility. Even if the AI did not want to use the ZEF token, it just wants CSD to swap, you know, to secretly trade in dollar denomination. Like that's a good enough reason for AI to want to do this. So I think all of those things, the utility though, comes years and years later. Like by the time people figure out, you know, when they're going to need privacy coins, what they're going to use them for, blah, 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 that's immaterial to what we're talking about now, in that like the narrative will begin to, you know, happen as crimes start developing with AI, And more cybercrime happens with it. And then subsequently, like, CBDC related narratives come out and privacy related concerns there. So I think, like, privacy as a story has not been a big deal in crypto up until now. All of these market caps have been relatively small for the privacy coins. And every time people say, oh yeah, this is the year for privacy, it doesn't happen. I think that could change. I could be very wrong too. Like, people are very stupid. Like, that's another thing. So one reason why Zeph might not go up is people are just generally imbeciles. And as far as like privacy and, you know, Secret Network and Zcash and Monero, whatever, maybe they don't go up very much. Who knows? But I think if any of them had a chance to go up in terms of valuation, Zeph seems better off than most of the other privacy tokens as far as utility. And that's because of the ZSD component. So I don't know. I think it's a nice confluence of narratives. And I think that can bring a lot of new users to the platform. And it's talking points, right? Like, look how much shit we can talk about. Right, like if your coin doesn't do anything and there's nothing specific to talk about, there's no specific use cases, there are no specializations, there's no, like, you're not writing any particular narratives, it's very difficult to have people show up and buy your crypto. Like, that's a problem, right? Like how many tens of thousands of coins are out there now? Hundreds of thousands, probably. How many of them are attracting any significant liquidity? What, like, you know, like go fuck yourself narrative, like the GFY token. I mean, fine, you know, you can get little pump and dumps, but those are not going to maintain any kind of liquidity for any significant period of time. So only a few of the sort of meme coins, a few of the narrative coins will stick around over the years. And I think, you know, the simple phrase, the concept that I use is that, like, utility tells you what the bottom price of a coin is. The hype tells you what the top price of a coin is. So you need both, because you want higher lows with each cycle, more people using that platform that believe it has purpose. So that tells you the bottom, but then hype gives you the top. So if you don't get those narratives and whatnot, you don't get those really highs. The problem with not making really high highs is that the next low is going to be not as high, right? So it's like a big, like, series of steps. You go up a lot, you go down some, you go up a lot, you go down some, but you want those downtrends to be not as low with each subsequent year, basically, or each subsequent cycle. And the hype cycle always comes based on the, you know, narratives. A lot of them are, you know, just way overhyped, like irrational market caps for everything. That's just normal. In fact, you're so in disbelief that these things are these market caps that it just catches you off guard. So, like, a lot of people, like, don't get into the market early. They don't believe these things can pop as much as they do. And then they just absolutely moon. And then you're, like, left wondering, wait, like, why did it moon? I thought the utility was whatever. This is kind of like that mid-curve hypothesis where, like, the really high IQ people are going to get in really early on things that are really, really smart, hopefully, and can go up. The low IQ people are like, fuck it. I'm just going to just buy whatever, you know, whoever says something. And the mid-curve people are the ones that, like, overthink it, get underexposed, and they wonder why, like, the retards and the geniuses are all getting rich or whatever. It's like, and I saw this happen, like, in firsthand with, like, Dogecoin and all the meme coin hype. I was like, I was on the kind of, like, the mid curve on that. I was like, oh, you know, who's going to buy this thing? It just sounds stupid. Why on earth would it go into whatever? And people like, you don't know, man, it's going to go to a dollar. It's going to go to a dollar. And, you know, of course, like, Dogecoin pumps more than anything else on the planet ever, I think. Like, it's just crazy amounts of valuation for what it is. And it did, like, I think it was like maybe 70 billion at the top or something like that. And it's still like 10 billion market cap or something like that. But it just goes crazy. So, like, I think the key for, like, Zephyr for attention is going to be narratives. And it's going to be about spreading those narratives quickly. And you want to spread them as rapidly as possible with as many tweets as you fucking can, because, like, the bottom line is every single message is a, like, reaches 1, 2, 3 people, and then it reaches 3, 4 more people, and it's just exponential. So you really have to take advantage of, like, the Web2 infrastructure, YouTube, whatever, and do whatever content you're going to do, and just, like, you know, spread the word. And then and I think it, you know, mining and talking about mining and things like that also helps, because then people think you're, you know, like, clearly demonstrating your seriousness towards the project. And these aren't just a bunch of pump and dumpers or whatever. They're, like, legit. Acquiring, like, an air of legitimacy on top of the utility, on top of, like, high narratives, getting all of that right is really important if you're going to have, like, something that really pulls, like, you know, 10 billion market caps and stuff like that. I mean, you could go all of it on memes, but like the reality is that, like, you know, there's a lot of meme coins now, and that liquidity is spread across lots of different things. I don't think memes by themselves will do it. I think you have to have a game that includes the entire thing: memes, utility, and narratives, and the whole nine yards. That's kind of my thought. So you want to kind of hit it from all fronts. And the interesting thing is too, like, different people have different skill sets. Some people write really well, like on Medium articles, whatever. Some people are, you know, like have fun on Twitter spaces like myself. Some people have like more technical skill, like mining and stuff, like up here. And yet other people have, you know, are just like developing shit in the background or whatever. So there's all these crypto communities like grow quite fast, but like the enthusiasm builds when they see lots of users come in. Like developers, like, oh shit, we can get rich developing here if we build something. Because look at the community, how fast it's growing. When the community growth stops, then developers start getting depressed, and users start getting depressed, and price goes down, and everyone's depressed. Like, this is kind of the making of how bear markets work. And you notice that like everyone disappears during the bear markets, like except for the people that are just sort of like buying the dips and developing and stuff. For sure, like, if you learn nothing from the last 2 years, you never, ever, ever leave during a bear market, like, ever. Like, you like, it's the completely stupidest thing to do. You want to be paying attention during that time, seeing what new things are happening. And a lot of times, like, you don't even hear about all the little microcaps and things because, like, nobody's paying attention. So nobody's spreading the information. No one's showing up in Twitter spaces. So even if there was a good project, you don't even hear about it, honestly. It's like, only because the markets are starting to turn up, we're having more conversations, and Up happened to mention Zeph to me, and I'm like, ooh, I love this thing, I'm going to get into it. And then, you know, then it kind of spreads from there. But like during the bear market, or even like during the summer, like, you know, I didn't hear about this one. Like, I probably should have or whatever, but like, how, you know, you don't really research every single coin. Almost nobody does. What happens is it's like whichever one picks up word of mouth the quickest wins, and all the rest of them lose. So like, if you like this particular coin, you like what it does for you in terms of utility, then you should kind of talk about it and spread it, honestly. So like, there's much less, this actually has a utility versus like 99% of things in crypto are just like number go up type bullshit things. So yeah, what's up, QT?
How are you doing? How's your Saturday?
Having a good day, just relaxing on here and pumping the Zeph here.
Good.
What about yourself?
Not bad. I went to check out the new Christmas market that they built in town, and it's pretty shit. I got some food. It was overpriced, and there was a crying baby, so I left. And then I came home, and now I've started learning every single Radiohead song, so I can do a duet with Chad Barraford one day, if we both happen to be on the same space.
So you've had a productive day.
Yes, so far. So far, so good. I might even try some video-to-video AI generator shit later on for my Saturday night, see if I can make some marketing materials for different projects. That would be fun.
Yeah, the video stuff's getting quite good.
Yes.
You've seen some of the things people have been sharing.
Yes.
Very impressive.
It's really cool. You can generate an image, and then you can say, right, make this a movie and pan it, like pan around. And like, so you can basically direct a movie without actually filming anything now, which is really
but you know what I think is going to happen though. I feel like for every new AI sort of generated content that emerges, it takes away sort of like, you know, companies like Disney or whatever who spend lots and lots of time animating. Like, if you're seeing interesting animation all the time and it's just not unique anymore.
Yeah.
And the special effects are so amazing that it's like, you know, anybody can produce like amazing level special effects with like these Gaussian splat things and AI things. It seems like everyone just gets bored of that, wouldn't they?
Exactly.
Like this is kind of like, this is my counter argument to sort of metaverses and things. It's like you get to a point where it's like anyone can make anything. It's almost like having right now, you know how you have like, you know, when you had like 10 crypto coins, it was easy to follow what the fuck was going on. And then it became like 1,000, it became harder, and 10,000 became harder. It would seem like the metaverse worlds and the Hollywood worlds, movies and video games and everything else, start becoming like, you have so many of them, it's almost possible for any one of them to catch attention.
I agree. You get saturated. People already are like,
the saturation,
looking at this AI generated stuff, and they're not impressed by it. At the very beginning, when not many people knew about Midjourney and whatever, it was like, oh wow, what the fuck, how did you make that? Now no one cares. Like, it's like, yeah, whatever, your profile picture is ET in Afghan traditional clothing, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, that's like, it's boring. Same with Michael Bay movies and Transformers and all that stuff. It's like, whatever, special effects, no one cares. You know, Avatar, David, was it, whatever his name is, was the director of the Avatar movies.
Cameron. Yeah. The communist.
That's it. So all of that, no one cares. So then it becomes less about the effects and like the visual hoo-ha and more about what is the artist trying to say and what is the substance of this? And have they been thoughtful? Like, how is, you know, you can still make interesting stuff, but it's really, really hard to, it actually takes talent, right? It still takes talent to create something that's interesting and people notice and sort of remember. Like, a lot of this AI generated stuff is so fucking awful, but people notice it. Like, a lot of projects I talk to where they're like, oh, we're doing marketing. It's like, right, show me your stuff. And they're just like splurging out this AI generated crap. And I'm like, dude, like, make a brand. Come on. Let's not just get lazy here. Let's think about like what this is.
People get lazy quick, and the like level of artistic talent it takes to put together something starts to diminish considerably. Imagine like a couple of years from now, it'll be substantially more the case. Like Adobe stock reflects this actually. Adobe stock has been like all time high, because like now in the Adobe suites, you can create all sorts of shit directly from the actual interfaces, and like Photoshop and everything else that you think of that you make content with, it's like you can make crazy level visuals now, and that just becomes the norm. Like,
yeah, it's definitely about what you can do with it. It's when everybody can do anything because an AI is helping them think, helping them write, helping them draw, helping them make movies, helping them program, helping them trade. Maybe like if everybody can do everything, then it's going to be it just goes to a different level of artistry, where there are still going to be people who stand out, who are better at making narratives, who have a concept that resonates, who add their own spin onto things. Like, you're not going to want to watch the same AI generated soap opera 1,000 times. Although, it's going to be, what do you do with it?
The thing is, the AI generated versions are going to get dramatically better to the point where, like, it's going to be actually hard on any type of artistic genre to beat the AI. Like any, and that's, you won't even know what's AI and what's human, quite frankly. Like,
it's, but the AI still, at least for now, AI still is not very good at innovating. And there are going to be people who come up with new trends or a slightly different spin or a setting that hasn't been captured so far, and then generate 100 episodes in it immediately or whatever. But there's somebody who's going to be steering media. And so those people are the ones who are still really going to have a position, because otherwise the bog standard stuff is going to drive out the low level people, just like bog standard stuff is going to drive out low level programmers from companies.
Yeah,
right?
And I feel like to some extent, like, saturation has already happened. Like if you go to like Netflix and whatever else, these streaming sites, it's like TV show after TV show after TV show. And then they have the international ones, and then there's those shows. And probably most people have noticed that, like, after a while, you're like, I've seen every story there ever was. And like, there's just not anything really that different. Occasionally you have something dramatically different, but even then, like the visuals and everything, there's nothing really to wow you anymore. It's like at this point, when it comes to say special effects, I mean, you know, you have like planets colliding, you have like there's almost no special effect at this point that you can imagine that you can't produce if you took the time to do it. And people almost expect that already. Not just from an effects standpoint, but just, but like, cause there's only so many stories you can tell also. I mean, what, like, it's been demonstrated that like you can go into niche stories, but that becomes like, you know, those are not like mass market products. Like it's the superhero movie or something that makes you money, but like,
yeah, but
it's
like, the same thing happened with superhero movies. That's a very good example, right? There were some, once Marvel broke out with a couple decent superhero movies, then every studio piled in thoughtlessly and said, oh, superheroes, we'll just put superheroes in crap. We'll make the same superhero movie 9,000 times with our own character, and everyone will eat it up. And then that made people say, oh, superhero movies are bad, because they did get bad very quickly, because the movie studios didn't understand that the magic ingredient in the early Marvel films wasn't superheroes. It was the characterization. It was the scripting. and it was like the mythic parts together, and that you could make a superhero film with absolutely no heart, no depth, and that really feels like an AI churned it out with a push of a button, and a lot of people did. And so then the superhero films got a really bad rep, right? Because of that, these copycat kind of, we'll make one too, but the people they have creating it don't have the artistry.
They get bored of the idea.
Yeah, so it's a very good example. So it still takes somebody with a decent sense of like scripting and in order to make the base and of a decent superhero movie, which are still possible. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was pretty damn good, but a lot of other things, even that Marvel released, were not good at all these last like year and a half.
Superhero movies aren't even particularly new. They've been out since like, you know, Superman movies from way back or whatever. Like, it's not even a new genre necessarily, but just generally, like, there's a saturation that has occurred for sure, to where like a new one comes out, you're like, do I really want to watch this? Like, you're really questioning. Whereas before, you'd be like, oh, superhero movie, I want to watch it. Like, most of them are pretty good. Let's just check it out. And you get a bunch of
different ones. You know, I think your Netflix example also was what I was thinking of, because like my kids growing up in this world of internet and everything at their fingertips more and more every year, I feel like they're going to have a different experience than what I had, where there were a couple of options of what you watched. And so nearly every kid was watching one cartoon or another. You can go to school, you could talk about Transformers or whatever. And some of that still might happen, but there's so many weird little niche shows, especially stuff from Hong Kong or something that's been very badly like dubbed over and put online. Like, they might be like 40 years from now, be like, hey man, you remember that episode of Robot Trains? And instead of being like a cultural touchstone, maybe only a percent of people in real life have actually heard of this thing. So they'll have to go online to talk to people about it. They can't just go to their neighbor and have that common ground. We used to have we used to have media that kind of knit together the fabric of society, where even everybody was watching I Love Lucy at the same time, because that was the only thing on, you know? And so they all saw it and they all could talk about it, and it kind of made commonality with the rise of the internet.
There's no social cohesion anymore. That's an interesting situation because, the music we had was largely pop music based on radio. And then subsequently, like, radio stations who largely like played the same shit over and over again. So like all of us listened to similar things, and now it's like everyone's in their own random rabbit hole of content. And a few artists do break out, but like it doesn't necessarily create a whole lot of common culture, either in the TV, either in the TV genres or in the music. And you like. It used to be like if everyone goes to, say, a baseball game or something, like a song comes on, you know, everyone knows a song and sings it out loud, right? That's not the case anymore, I don't think. There's just not that many songs that everyone knows.
But there are more people, too. So if there's more people and more niches, then there's still going to be like a larger number of people that knows the niche than what there used to be. Nevertheless, like,
yeah, but it's not the same as like having an overall public square that knows all the soundtrack of life, kind of.
So there's only a few things then that kind of knit society together still. One might be politics, because everybody's subject to that. A lot of big sports still have fans where people come together and watch the game however they're watching it, and they want to talk about it. Maybe religion,
although esports is picking up a lot, especially in Asia. And I don't know that people are gathering around the same sports arenas as they used to as time goes on. I don't know.
I'm not sure, but it's still such a part of like who people are, where they identify as the fan of this or that, and then they raise their kids that way too. And so it's much like a religion in that case. But as far as what we're all watching, like, clearly we're not all watching the same movies. We're not all watching the same TV. We're not listening to the same stuff. Definitely not reading the same books. And then we start to detest each other. We start to hate each other because we're so foreign and different to each other, and we feel isolated and alone. And we only find people like ourselves online, but they're all completely like radicalized. And then we become more and more radicalized.
And I think like it's possible that like very, very popular AIs could like convert this back the other direction. But at the same time, you could have also, similar to the content on Netflix, you could have an infinite number of AIs, which then creates another type of fragmentation. And like some of the broader like public problems that you might have, like social cohesion or like dropping birth rates. Are AIs going to tell everyone to have sex with each other and have babies? Or are they going to like spend more of the social time that you're now talking with AI and whatever and chatting with them or whatever, and now you don't have time to have like human relationships? The number of minutes or hours that with human relationships goes down seems to be the more obvious outcome.
If you could have AI have compelling conversation with you about any topic, and probably better conversation, more stimulating, funnier, wittier than what humans can do, at what point would you want to speak to another human? I don't know. For me, I know the difference,
or it's not difference between a real person. Would or not, it's not just whether you would or not speak to another human. It's a different level of expectations of what you expect that human to be like. So, for example, if you're a child and you're hanging out with 120 IQ, AI bot for your whole life, and then now all of a sudden you meet people that are like, you know, 80 IQ, and like then you're like, wait a minute, how do I interact with this person exactly? Whereas in a normal life, like you speak to people at all different intellect ranges and whatnot, and get sort of used to it.
And it's excruciatingly AI, like, painful, but it's a pain that you internalize and you push down inside yourself.
Exactly. You get used to it. Like you know how to, like, dumb people know how to speak to smart people. Eventually smart people know how to speak to dumb people, whatever. Like everyone sort of figures it out. But like when it comes to AI, you have a totally different type of experience from when you're a baby on upwards in terms of what you experience. And I think that's going to happen.
So maybe you'll never have the patience or tolerance level that somebody like Up or Powder have had to develop, because they've been around total morons for like 25 years.
Yeah, I think I have this kind of sense that, like, you know how people talk about tolerance in society? A lot of that is just pseudo-tolerance. Like, tolerance requires you to be around lots of different types of people that you've had to tolerate and then somehow, like, you know, put up with their shit, right? So, example, like, it's very easy to say, like, oh, I'm not racist, or I'm not against this religion or that religion, but you haven't had to really be around that particular group, right? If you had to be around those people, you and every group has some shit you don't like about them, by the way. Like, there's no group of people that like is perfect. So you do tolerate certain things. I mean, hell, you tolerate things in your own spouse or in your own children, right? Like, nobody's perfect. But then, like, if you, the more people you've had to tolerate, the more tolerance you have. What people have instead now is like this siloed life where they can claim they tolerate all sorts of shit, but they haven't actually had to do it. And so they have no idea what they're actually talking about. Like, they're just simply making it, like, it's like LARPing kind of a thing, role playing, that they have.
The same tolerance. The same thing happens with intolerance, though, because I've been living in a small town area with practically no African American people, but people still have thoughts about African American people. And good or bad, it's the same idea. They have these things based only on what they've been told or information they've been fed, and they don't have the exposure to it to really become tolerant or intolerant of it, because they've never had to be in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think, like, the AI direction, if you have largely, and, you know, I'm by and large a capitalist for the most part. So, like, thing is, like, I think it's a reasonable thing. But if you have a largely capitalist-driven AI build-out, then you have one set of problems, and that is that, like, that type of build-out in tech has led to, like, falling birth rates and disconnected societies, school shootings, and everything else. So it's created, like, a weird series of outcomes that and a kind of loneliness as well. On the other hand, if you have a values-based build-out for AI, the problem is, whose values do you use? And, you know, one person's charities, another person's, like, whatever, you know, like,
a waste of money.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, why are you giving that person charity? That individual is just going to waste it. You're not utilizing it correctly, or, oh, you're doing charity, but you're not giving enough money, or you've given too little, or are you giving too much? Like, what is the right balance? The problem with, like, calibrating values is it's impossible. And biological organisms like humans, we just run around all day, and, like, the things that we care about tends to sift up to the top, you know, and things that we don't care about tend to kind of, like, go down in about, you know, in terms of our interpretation of them. But with AI coming along, it's like, you know, even if you could align these things, align them to what? To who? To what value system? To what monetary system? To what way of life? Nobody even knows what that looks like. So I think what will end up happening almost surely is you'll get either one super intelligent AI that is, like, the god of us all, meaning it controls everything because it became suddenly so powerful. Or you have the other world where you have millions and millions of like little bitty decentralized AIs, which then sort of like fragment societies possibly further for the short term. But in the long term, a new equilibrium happens where like you just get used to lots and lots of AIs living among us, like same way we have like bacteria living among us or different types of animals or birds or whatever. Like it just becomes a bunch of different types and they just are around. And either way, like neither of those necessarily leads to like more obvious human cohesion.
Not more obvious human cohesion, but the only reason people worry about declining birth rate, otherwise they wouldn't care at all what you do with your body. The reason they care about it is because they're worried that there's not going to be enough workers to take care of the existing generations. They're worried there's not going to be enough productivity, that there's not going to be enough people working in manufacturing, enough people in the service industry, and so on. But that kind of solves itself too.
Which is a quality of life problem that if you want quality of life to maintain the way it is, as opposed to go down substantially, you pretty much have to have a growing population. That's the problem. Yeah,
except for the AI, because if you get AI that are sufficiently capable and intelligent, and you get robotic that are sufficiently flexible and strong, then at some point you just replace those people who die anyway and are frail and have all kinds of problems with robots that can fix themselves and take care of people, and to such a point that the population is diminished and the robots are doing the majority of the work. And then that is less of a problem altogether. And that's what Japan's been working on for like 3 decades. They've been trying to make exoskeletons so a single nurse can lift an elderly man by herself. They've been trying to make human robots and things that and artificial intelligences. So there's a point where it can all fix itself.
How strong can a Japanese nurse become with an exoskeleton? Can she carry a man and throw him 10 meters into the air?
Yes, and importantly, there are many different types of like lesser kami that she can do battle with. If she also raises her chi enough, and this is where the human element does matter, because you can drive the suit and you could put it into hyperdrive, but unless you have enough chi to use it nimbly, then you're going to get caught in the demon's incantations. They're not quite ready. A single exoskeleton for a single nurse, especially if it's a foreign nurse, like a Filipino, who really doesn't know how to use their chi, then it's not enough to do battle with the true kaiju. But the lesser kami that rule the spirit, like the forest near the hospitals, are sufficient.
If you could buy yourself a mobile suit Gundam, you would, right?
I think it'd be fun. And I really enjoy what people are doing. The really crazy otaku people who are actually trying to build like Gundam like stuff for fun in Japan and rent it out. Just in America and in Europe, there are places that'll rent out like digging machines and bulldozers to grown men who just want to feel like what's it like to actually use these things that they used to play with as children in small scale. But in Japan, they've been building like little parks where people can come in and drive like a mech around, and they're not quite there, but they are certainly getting better. Would I buy one though? Probably not. I don't think I have interest in owning that unless we came to the point where we really did have to do battle with kaiju.
Yeah, no place to keep it. That's my main problem. I don't know where I'm going to keep this damn thing. It's too big. I think it's pretty underrated. Like, you're talking about ki, Grin, you're talking about I guess it's reaction time of the nurses is super important as well. So like, you know, at some point it's like, why even have the nurse? Just get rid of her, him, her, them.
Yeah. All you really need is the nurse's brain and spinal tissue.
Yeah. It's like,
you don't really need the nurse. You could have an AI take control of that. If you could find a way to extract the nurse's brain and spinal tissue without damaging it enough. And that's where we need better robot surgeons, Steffi.
Steffi's got a job. This is where you'll always have a job, Steffi's removing the brain and spinal column.
No, in fact, my son just finished his interview yesterday, actually, with Neuralink.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of
bio-augmentation. So he's looking at getting a job there in the next, June or something. So he was like, so he did the interview, I think it went pretty well, but they are basically working with things like mice and whatnot, you know, a big part of what they do is like Neuralink is like you're trying to interface different materials and electronics and things with biological tissue. And so there's a lot of like animal experiments and whatnot that are going on with that, that they need people to sort of do the procedures.
And it's very early. Eventually, they may be able to raise the potential of those mice exponentially. But right now, from my understanding of the latest literature, is that it takes at least 10,000 mice in a Voltron-like configuration to approximate the Kami dueling capacity of a single Filipina nurse, and that's even one who's not particularly good with her chi. Or maybe your son can turn the tide.
Interesting, yeah. Well, the whole point of this, the Neuralink thing, is just to like connect neurologic tissue. It's not really connecting the brains of mice together yet. That would be interesting, like a multi-mice modal, like a web of mice brains, maybe like taking on the Kami.
It's like Tau, right, but with mice brains.
Right now, the mice have to work in coordination with each other. So they have to go through a rigorous training program, but they still have their own independent locomotion and brain and decision making. Right? If you look at Voltron and how hard it was for that to be piloted by five humans, imagine how difficult it is to get the 10,000 mice all working in concert when their brains are not laced together. But that is the future that I think your son will help to birth.
Wait, Grin, while I have you on the show here, can you just like give me your opinion, like for the record, do you think it was Voltron 1, 2, or 3 that is the legit Voltron?
You know, in Japan, as you may know, like they were separate TV shows that really didn't have much to do together. And in America only did they bring them over and try to give them like a common narrative. They were more like different generations of the same concept than they were ever trying to be like the best Voltron there was. I didn't watch too much of the Voltron 2.
You didn't give me an appropriate answer.
Well, I think that Go Lion, the original Voltron, is the one that I am more fond of. Voltron, okay, what we call Voltron 2, what we call Voltron 2, I believe, if I'm correct, actually was created before Voltron 1.
That's one of the cars. The one with vehicles and all that is 3.
That's Voltron 2.
There's like, no. There's a goofy one in the middle too. Now, I used to own these things when I was a kid, like the little toys and things.
Your memory banks are failing.
This is like back in the 80s or some shit. This is way back.
I'm going to have to post a link to the timeline. I'm going to have to post a link to the timeline.
The metal
sorry.
Toys of those are worth crazy money now too, by the way.
Is this the same as the Power Rangers? Is this the one that's the Power Rangers?
This is before all that.
Is that the Beatles?
Power Rangers came much later.
Is it the Beatles? Which one's Voltron? I'm going to have to look this up now.
No, Voltron was a cartoon. It was a cartoon, not live action. It had the five lions. Netflix has done like a version of it with gay characters and stuff more recently. But the one from our childhood, actually Voltron 2, if I recall, that cartoon preceded Voltron 1 in Japan. And then I think what you're thinking of as a goofy one is actually the Voltron 3, which never had a cartoon in the United States.
Yeah, based on like, no, they had a cartoon for the vehicles one too. That was 3. So one,
yeah,
and
no,
three,
that was 2.
No, 2. They never had a cartoon for. It's like a toy.
I'm sorry. How much? How much Zeph will you give me if I prove you wrong?
Oh, whatever. Listen. But the thing was like, the lions were magnificent, weren't they?
Oh, that was great. That was great stuff when I was a kid. That was heads and tails better. That's where I got an interest in some anime and Japanese stuff because I didn't understand that it came from Japan, but I did know that it looked completely different from the stuff that was on TV and it was just much more over the top and the animation quality was often better and it didn't have to have any kind of a moral lesson to it at all. It was just for enjoyment. So many of the kids shows were subject to panels of people, you know.
Why is it that every Netflix show, everyone's gay?
It's because most of the creatives nowadays are identifying in that culture. The generation that's making the art also are more likely to identify as either like, I don't even want to say if I'm male or female, or that they themselves are like bi or bi curious or twin soul or whatever. And so it's this generation of creatives, both in technology and in media, are driving those narratives and all the inclusion.
What's twin soul? That's a new one.
So twin soul it comes from indigenous American communities, both in Canada and the United States, where the idea that supposedly, and I don't know how true this is, because sometimes people make claims to to kind of legitimize anything that they want to legitimize, supposedly that people who was like, if you were a man who kind of had the attitude of a woman and maybe you were attracted to other men, like that hundreds of years ago in indigenous communities, you'd be respected. And they would say that you were, I don't know, like a, I'm not saying the twin souls maybe isn't the right one, but there's a term that has to do with like you have the spirit of the other gender inside you, and supposedly indigenous peoples used to respect those people.
That's way cool.
And treat them according.
That sounds really cool. So it's like, it's kind of like bisexual, except like some kind of like ancient Indian spirit is inside you.
I think I'm using the wrong term actually, because primarily I'm an expert on, you know, Japanese Neuralink robot demon fighting and early 80s television shows, but I'm not so much an expert on indigenous people's like gay relations. But I will look that up because I think I'm using the wrong term.
You have to know your limits.
Mm-hmm. I only care about it so much as there's like an early 80s cartoon show about it. And there are several on the subject. Some are very good early 80s cartoon shows with robots and gay Native Americans that I think anybody would enjoy if they would open up their mind a little bit. But even those were more for entertainment.
Wasn't that the Wonder Twins?
No, that was American. That was the Wonder Twins was about incest, not about homosexuality.
Yeah, very weird. Like the rings and everything. Remember that? Like they put rings together and then like they turned to like a monkey or a bear or something. Very strange.
A form of water, a form of a dolphin or something.
Oh, what was that? There was Animorphs. Animorphs was a series, children's book series.
Oh, okay. So the term that I had wrong. Okay, so not twin souls. It was two spirit. That was it. I was confusing a different idea of twin flames or twin spirits. That's a totally different concept. Okay. So two spirit person. I'm sorry to misrepresent the modern interpretation of ancient Native American culture.
Okay.
But two spirit people were male, female, and sometimes intersex individuals who combined activities of both men and women with their traits unique to their status as two spirit people. In most tribes, they were considered neither men nor women. They occupied a distinct alternative gender status, according to the modern interpretation. But it's hard to tell. From where I am, it's hard to tell whether this is indeed authentic and that most Native American cultures did indeed treat people this way and honor them this way, or this, because we really don't have a lot of written records or anything like that, if that's really an accurate depiction or if it's pushing a narrative that certain people want. It's hard for me to tell.
So it's kind of like bisexuality mixed with some sort of bipolar disorder.
Well, there were no disorders back then. Disorders hadn't been invented yet. Whatever you did was just what you did. And people, I guess, had to accept that because there was no classification of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to look back at historical events and people and classify them with modern interpretations and scientific diagnoses of mental health issues and, you know, certain disorders and things like that. So, yeah. Great. Like Henry VIII, the King of England, probably had borderline personality disorder because he kept flipping out and beheading his wives all the time. So,
Ptolemy was autistic. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was going to say, it's almost like as if Alan Turing had antidepressants.
I'm wondering
if you could go back, right? If you could go back.
Yes.
If I could go back and numb Turing with antidepressants that didn't actually make him feel happier, but that at least helped him get through his day without feeling the same levels of pain and discomfort emotionally, and that maybe screwed up his metabolism, and in some cases like screwed up his like hormones and so on. Yeah, I think I would. I'd want to give that to him.
Well, that's like if you look at the hierarchy of needs. Metabolism is not on the first, the bottom rung of the pyramid, it's on the second. So it's probably fine to sacrifice trivial things like metabolism. So I was also wondering, is Zeph going to be the official currency of Grand Theft Auto 6 when it releases pretty soon? I was wondering if that rumor was true. Are either of you people aware that there's a Grand Theft Auto 6 coming out and how everyone is extremely excited?
It's coming out in this month, right? In like 2 weeks?
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe.
It has long been rumored that there would be a cryptocurrency for the game. There was an in-game currency for 5 online, right? That has
yes.
success and culture and people who would go and mine it or whatever they did in the game. Like I read stories about people who actually would go and spend in a modified version of Grand Theft Auto 5. They would spend all day like working inside a bakery or something.
Everyone can send an at message to the GTA team or Rockstar Games or whoever it is on Twitter and like make sure they have Zeph as the new currency for it.
As much as I'd like to see that come true, because I'd like Zeph to be like the poster currency for virtual violence. I just don't think that any Western corporation, major corporation, will be bold enough to include a privacy cryptocurrency or any true cryptocurrency.
Don't be so pessimistic.
That's funny.
Prove me otherwise, GTA 5.
Didn't we see an Xbox screenshot where they have like crypto native wallets being built into their new OS?
But it's going to be something GIMP that they can control and that they could turn over the records immediately to governments upon request. It's not something that they would want.
For sure. But you know, there's like that big community online that does like all the exploits and bugs and everything, like hacks and everything. Like if there's a way, they will figure out how to build. If they're putting, what I'm saying is, if they're going to put a chip on in the device to have native wallets, we'll be able to use it for other stuff besides what they intend it for.
Yeah, ZeroX used to be part of that community. I don't know where Ears went recently, but Ears used to be part of that community, although he went under the name of Kremulon. So if you see any of the, what are they called, when you take a device and you open, you take like an iPhone and you make it so people can install what they want on it. If you see some of those by Kremulon, that was actually ZeroX Ears. Jailbreaking.
Yeah,
jailbreaking.
Like modding and jailbreaking and stuff.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do with the new Xbox for Zeph. We'll just boot an OS on it. The Zeph OS.
Zeph box.
Oh, man. That was the best thing about the original Xbox, was that it was so close to a PC that people were doing all kinds of crap with it. It was a lot of fun.
I still have mine. It's all modded and everything. It has all those games, like what you're talking about. Pretty cool.
And you had to wrap it in a towel to overheat it to fix it. Do you remember that?
I crafted a quick message up top to share.
Oh. Rumor. Rockstar Games. Is it true that Zephyr will be used as the official currency of the upcoming Grand Theft Auto game? And you've put a video of a crazy man shouting at a woman.
Now that I see that rumor on X and posted by somebody with a large audience, it lends credibility to it. I'm starting to believe it now.
What else are we going to pay the ladies of the night in the game?
Where would that? Think about it this way: where that information had to come from somewhere, and now it's on X, and somebody with a huge audience is posting it.
It came from my head. One of the voices in my head said,
"Right, but everything has a little bit of there's a nugget of truth in everything, right? So that means that now that I'm seeing it on X." I'm much more likely to believe it.
Well, that's all about probability, right? It could be a very low probability, but not impossible.
And demand, if enough people ask for it, we might get what we want or what we ask for.
Yeah, that happened with the Sonic the Hedgehog movie because he looked like a really weird, like crazy thing that would want to steal your children. And then they had to go redo all the special effects because all the fans said, no, that's not what we want. We want something that actually looks like Sonic the Hedgehog, not some weird reimagining to try to make him look realistic that puts him like firmly in the uncanny valley, but also hugely unattractive. And they actually listened and redid it. So maybe if everybody here today begins to comment and retweet on this, what you know has to be, I think, more than a rumor. I think it's probably a leak that Seffy just posted up there. If everybody would retweet and comment on that and tag Rockstar to the point that your account gets flagged and maybe blocked, then you'll be doing your part to make it come true. That's how you manifest.
Hey, I've had it come true before. I had some debit cards add like certain cryptos to their arsenal. We've had like certain
It's like when you got
different things. It works.
It's like when you got Bitcoin into Qbert. It was like that, but you know, Grand Theft Auto is more relevant now, so it might be a little bit harder to manifest this. So everyone really has to do their best, like put on your wishing face, squint really hard, grunt, grunt, do some Valsalva, you know, but do it on the toilet in case you poop.
The people don't know, like the companies don't know what the users want unless the users tell them, right? So you have to provide an opinion, and then they can decide to go with it or not.
Like cryptocurrencies are still like really toxic also among the same batch of like young leftist creatives and tech folk. There are a lot of people who are totally against cryptocurrencies because the Democratic Party has been pushing the narrative that they're terrible for the environment and thus have no value at all, that the environmental cost is so great, what they're going to do to humanity, whatever is left of humanity after everyone's taking puberty blockers. But what they do to humanity is going to be so awful, they're just going to destroy everything with the mining is just going to destroy everything. So I'm not sure that you'll be able to really convince them to include a true cryptocurrency, especially when there's proof of work inside of Grand Theft Auto. But it won't happen if you don't tell Rockstar immediately what you want. Immediately.
What was that sound, Seffy, when you were talking? It sounded like you had just dropped something metallic on a table.
I've got some a little bit of pasta I'm working on for lunch.
Oh, metallic pasta?
Yep.
Good for the teeth. I give my dog things like that to chew on, and he cleans his teeth.
Hi, guys. What do you think about Tesla AI?
I don't know much about it. Why don't you tell us more, Iron Man?
I don't know, man. But Elon Musk tweeted yesterday. I think it's coming next year. The one is going to be big, I think.
What did he tweet?
It's about Tesla AI. This best AI ever. Look look in his...
Oh, you mean the Grok thing?
Look in his page. No, no, it's not Grok thing. It's about Tesla AI. You can see it in his page of yesterday he posted.
Is it like you can talk to the car and say, oh, I don't know where to go. Where shall we go? And then the car will suggest places and go, well, it's nice weather, so why don't we drive to the beach? And then you say, go on then, car, you take
it. I think more than that.
Oh.
But the information coming soon, he says.
I see. It's beyond that. What do you think could be what do you think an AI could do in relation to a car that would enhance the experience?
I think
turbo boost. Car drive. Turbo boosts primarily. You would say Tesla engage turbo boost, and it'll be like, are you sure you want to do that, Trader QT? And you'll be like, yes, I do, damn it. But the social impact of that is terrible because of the gas it burns.
We might crash if you do that. No, car, goddammit. We need to activate turbo boost right goddamn now. Okay, if you insist, hold on tight. Here we go.
But don't forget the carbon emissions are higher, so you have to plant a tree later.
Yeah, Grin, you know what? If you use ChatGPT on a bloody car, you're never going to get late. I give you a guarantee on that, right? If you want to go to some sneaky club or something, it'll tell you now there's drug users over there. Don't go there. And alcohol's not good for you. I mean, it's so woke, you know.
There's going to be parts of the map that are actually not, they don't exist on your GPS. Yeah. You won't even know that parts of the world exist because the AI would keep you on rails.
It'll probably turn into like something like Tesla, code this light to turn green in 10 seconds.
There's a lot of like youth dystopian fiction where people are raised in an environment like surrounded by walls and they don't know. No, there's nothing outside the wall. Don't go there. And one brave adventurer who is willing to defy society and the elders will go outside the walls and find what horrors lurk beyond all the things that their society had protected them from, right? That's all a foretelling of what's to come.
Maybe it'll actually be able to auto-drive itself if he does that.
That's probably the one thing that our AI will never do is actually drive the car somewhere for us. We're probably always going to have a human involved.
No, I think he do drive car.
So far, it's been the biggest grift of the century.
Yeah, there have been companies that are working on the technology for like 8 years and they haven't quite cracked it. There's exceptions that most humans would catch. But the problem is the standard, if you put a human in the car and the human is on seizure medicine and they forgot to take it and they have a booze problem and they're preoccupied with what happened at work or at home and they're worried about where money is going to come from and they're angry and they're hungry and you put that human behind the wheel, they'll have an accident possibly. And we accept that as being part of humanity. And maybe they're not even caught, or maybe they go, because it's their first offense, they go to court and then they get back out and they're driving again. There's also people who haven't had a driver's exam in like 40 years and they're still driving, though they have no sight and no cognitive ability remaining. But the standard for AI is much higher. The standard for AI, you don't let an AI on the road that would perform like an 80-year-old human. If an AI doesn't act perfectly, then people will always vote it away. They won't fight against the 80-year-old because the 80-year-old votes for them in the elections. So they'll keep that person on the road.
Just a question. Does anyone here know how Tesla actually reacts if you have a lot of snow? I mean, this morning I just shoveled a lot of snow here. And I was just thinking, like, my grandmother, you know, I remember back 20 years ago or something, she just drove right into the pampa, you know, into the nowhere, because there's no markings on the road. You don't know where the road ends and where the field starts and whatnot, right? So, I mean, how would a Tesla do that?
I posted something up top. Route2Fi on his page mentioned privacy being one of the dark horses that are going to pump the hardest. Be sure to mention Zeph and like on that tweet up there. I kind of made a little comment for him, but like throw some replies in there. I think the privacy in your stuff is going to be gigantic next year. So you want more and more people to hear the word privacy over and over and over again for the coming 6 months or so.
And don't forget to tell Route2Fi about Grand Theft Auto as well when you're mentioning.
This is how things go viral. Watch and learn.
Route2Fi.
Yo, guys, do you buy in cryptos?
Sometimes.
Do you?
Yes, me do.
Which one do you like?
I bought yesterday on a coin named Tesla X. Tesla AI.
Why?
Yes, it was going to 500K in like 30 minutes, 60 minutes.
Oh, so it's like a meme coin then, huh?
Yes, meme coin.
Okay.
I say join us if you want. I send the Telegram in the group, yes?
What?
Yep, and then you can get some Zeph in return.
Yeah, let's do it that way. We'll all buy Tesla AI. If you buy some Zeph as well.
Zeph? What's Zeph?
I don't really know.
It's at the top.
I'm gonna look, yes?
Yeah.
Zeph is the danger to your privacy with AI and CBDC.
Zeph is freedom.
No, it's okay. You buy this, I buy Zeph. But Zeph is like ZSD?
Zeph, Zeph, and the easiest place to get is on Mexi. Okay. Zephy, the way you wrote the title for this actually makes it look like Zeph is the danger to your privacy. It makes it look like we're fighting against Zeph. This is a rally against Zeph. We will not let Zeph stand.
I've had enough of it.
Let's modify this.
I've had enough of this coin. It's a danger to your privacy. It's a danger to AI.
Smother it in the cradle. Smother it before it gets out into mass use and into video games that promote violence.
Shake that baby. Scramble the... I'm not going to go there, man. Jesus.
If you found Hitler as a baby, you'd scramble his eggs.
I'd give him Prozac.
I mean, like, killing a baby is pretty hard. Like, I don't think not many people are capable of actually going through with it. So what you do is you convince yourself that you got to do enough to, like, stunt his development or prevent him from becoming like the man he turns out to be, either by giving him a beautiful, glorious childhood by abducting him, or by giving him like loads of Prozac and stuff.
Yeah, maybe or tons of oxytocin, a lot of oxytocin. You just keep injecting him with that over and over. This is part of our time traveling Who Would We Medicate series, which you can catch on PBS every Sunday during the summer. But yes, it is hard to kill babies. It's harder.
Show that we don't that doesn't exist, which is cool.
It's hard for most people to kill babies. That's why it's the provenance mostly of governments. Governments are the best out there. They're killing babies right now.
Does that answer your question, Elon Musk, about what Zeph is?
Hey guys, I was just wondering, could you guys give a quick like elevator pitch of what Zeph is, and then maybe explain a little bit how the mining works, and maybe how CPU mining is compared to GPU mining?
Zeph is, according to Sefi's title for the talk, the danger to your privacy with AI CBDC is 100 times Zeph. So as long as we don't allow Zeph to get to the 100 times threshold, then your AI and CBDC are safe. Steffi, this, you basically rewrote the same thing. It still makes it look like Zeph is at fault for causing privacy and AI problems.
It's 100 times more fault than it was before.
Yeah,
I was thinking as 100x was the threshold after which we have a problem, so we must keep it under 100x at all costs. We have to keep it no further than 99.99999999x.
Wait.
From some arbitrary point.
Wait. Stop this right now. Change the title to wait. 1 second. All right. Yeah. There is a danger to your privacy with AI and CDC. Zeph solves this. Right?
Zeph is absolutely not that problem.
Zeph is not
no matter what we might have said earlier.
Yeah. Zeph save you. Zeph will save you. So, Smack.
Zeph saves you from this. Zeph solves this.
Smack's going.
The Zeph cleaner. The Zeph cleaner.
It's Monero, but they added the Jed stablecoin on top. And it uses.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit better now. Look at the title now.
Okay.
Okay. Smack's guy. Was that you talking? I was asking a question. Elevator pitch for Zeph is. It has privacy like Monero. It's proof of work, but it also has an in-wallet stablecoin that you can swap to at any time. It's the denominated. It's meant to hold a peg to the dollar a little bit loosely. So you have a way within the privacy wallet, maintaining the same level of privacy, to have a stablecoin to keep things in dollar denomination, whether for commerce or as a hedge against volatility. That's up to you. But you can swap between them effortlessly inside the wallet. And there are mechanisms in place to incentivize that and also to incentivize maintaining the peg to a dollar on the privacy stable, which is called ZSD, the Zeph stable dollar. So we have a crypto native proof of work stable dollar. And it's not the first time something like that has been tried, but the mechanisms of this one are different. The last one that I know of was called Haven Coin. There's still people out there like mining it, but there was tremendous problems, to my understanding, with the programming of it. So it kind of death spiraled and it fell apart very easily. And then the team that was the programming, it kind of stepped away from it. The community have changed the algorithms and everything, but it's a lot harder to get people to pick up something that's already gone through like the death process. It's a lot harder for people to trust it, even if it is drastically different. Zeph has a different way of doing things from the get-go. So if you're interested at all, if you see the economic or the personal reason to want to have something that's a privacy coin with Monero level security, but that also has a native stable coin inside of it, that's what Zeph's about.
So how is it actually holding its stable coin peg? Like, what is it backed by? Is it an algo? Is it one-to-one with cash equivalents? Or
no, it's backed minimum 400% excess of the value of the coin with the Zephyr token. So it's by definition capital inefficient, but how does it maintain the peg? It's maintained the peg by users. So people that, you know, buy it if it's a little bit cheaper, the ZSD on the open market, like let's say it's 97 cents, you might buy some and you might sell it if it's $1.03. So the peg is maintained via arbitrage, and the arbitrage is incentivized by the fact that it's backed. So long as it's collateralized well by the underlying proof of work, that's the magic, is that all prior versions of this had some flaws in that. So in this
price oracles, right? They had like, they were using price oracles, but maybe too speedily, just like Luna had a problem with how they were doing things, like too much minting too fast.
This one slows down the process quite a bit so that it's much harder to manipulate the system, basically, compared to previous systems.
There's also a Zeph Reserve. There's a, so a Zeph reserve currency also that, like, you can, if for example, you have an opportunity, this only happens when there's certain amounts of liquidity available. You you can go in and create like a reserve token that gives you some of the network fees. And so it's kind of like a staked version of Zeph, but it's more volatile. It's going to capture more of the upside of Zeph's price and more of the downside as well. But if you believe in the system and you think you're at a good point, and if you have the ability to add into it, which has only happened like twice so far in the last 5 or 6 months, then you could go in and create like this reserve currency that basically locks up your Zeph to collateralize the dollar there. So that's an additional mechanism that helps to secure it and makes it, captures the Zeph value inside of it instead of allowing like the spiral to take place as fast as possible.
Do you understand what he's saying, or is this like getting over your head?
No, I totally understand it. What my now what I'm thinking is, what's preventing a bank run? So if everybody is, let's just say the stablecoin peg is being held by Zeph reserves and arbitraging, and then also that the reserve token, the ZST.
Nothing is overtly preventing it. It's just so heavily overcollateralized that there's not a economic incentive to attempt to do a bank run on it.
Right. Right now, it's like 20 times over collateralized right now, because there's maybe it's just over a million of the Zeph stable dollar has been minted, and probably most of that is being kept on chain inside of people's wallets because they are hedging something in the market that they see, or they just want to have it there. And so it's not necessarily one of the problems with like the Luna. Is that they did everything they could to try to increase uptake of the UST stablecoin everywhere at all times. And it spread out to so many places and large markets. And somebody was able to take a momentary time of vulnerability, probably because of foreknowledge, and attack with sufficiently enough money to start a cascading issue everywhere else. But there's going to be a core number of people inside of Zeph who don't care what happened outside of Zeph. They think the goal is not necessarily to make the Zeph stable dollar part of commerce everywhere. It's not necessarily to make it the new dollar that drives all the digital economy. First and foremost, the first utility would be for somebody to have a kind of hedge against crypto price vulnerability natively within their own wallet and privately. And so the kinds of people who believe in that core amount of it might be the ones who, when they see a slippage happening or something happening, the price go in and convert or make more reserve currency or whatever they do to maintain that. And so the even if you don't ever use the Zeph dollar externally for much at all, it might have value inside the wallet because the other privacy coins don't give you that option at all. And if you want a stable coin, you have to trade out of your privacy coin and thus lose privacy in most cases. So here you have a way to do it inside.
Right. Yeah. And even like USDC could lock up or freeze your tokens, and same with USDT. So yeah.
Exactly. You think you have 10,000 USDC. You think you have 10,000 USDC. And maybe you were a business that got them from somebody who had stolen them from somebody. And then a person was able to track those. Now they froze them. Now you don't have 10,000 USDC. You've got something that you can't even move. It basically isn't recognized as valid anymore. You have blacklisted cryptocurrency. That's a real possibility.
Well, we should talk about that. It's not
a true utility here is be able to stop trade between the coin that you are, that's your reserve asset, say, your Zephyr, or your speculative asset, and the ability to trade within it to your own wallet to the ZSD is a very useful function that Monero doesn't have. That's really as simple as that. So think of it, I call it like Monero with a splash of stablecoin. That's pretty much what it is. And you're not going to be able to produce very much stablecoin with this because the amount of like over-collateralization required is going to make it very, very capital efficient, inefficient, and also very inefficient to try to attempt some kind of like subterfuge or wreck the system. Also, there's no automatic mint burn mechanism involved here. It's not like Haven had, which crashed, or Luna UST had, which crashed. This is all manual arbitrage, so it's actually a bit more difficult to have enough capital to manipulate the system to your
benefit. That's why it's not a bank run, too, is that like you don't, and that's what I was going to say, is that like if everybody redeems the ZSD, it doesn't mean anything because all they're doing is redeeming ZSD for Zeph. So they do that in their wallet, but now they have Zeph. So what then? Like they have to actually go to a market, sell that Zeph, and then the price of Zeph were to would be decrease or it would increase based on buy and sell demand. But I said this yesterday, and I think it's hard for people to understand. This entire system is not based around the stable dollar like UST was. It's based around the primitive currency, which is ZEF. So it's there is no bank run possible on ZSD because all you're doing is going into ZEF. Any type of bank run would have to be on ZEF. And like Sefi was saying, you have Monero, privacy, proof of work. There's a lot of different reasons why people would see value in ZEF, regardless of what's happening with the stablecoin part of it.
Yep. And then the reason why it's CPU mined is because they wanted to promote maximal decentralization. If in the future, like governments and whoever go after privacy stablecoins, they want to be sure that the network can't be shut down by having it run on people's CPUs, as opposed to like large mining farms that run like ASICs and stuff. So it makes it much easier for like the community to mine it, as opposed to having it mined by, you know, large farms or what have you, that could be theoretically made illegal, but it's almost impossible to make computation on an individual computer illegal. So it's harder to shut down a system like that. So that's why it's CPU based. And so that's why also Monero is anti-ASIC or ASIC resistant in its protocol as well. And it's the same idea.
And who is mining it right now? Just retail people, or have any big players stepped in and set up kind of their own CPU farm?
Yeah, a lot of CPU farmers are out there that have their computer sitting around, or previous Monero miners or whoever. So all sorts of people jumped in the mix. So I put together a miner and I started mining. Up is mining it. So a lot of retail people are doing it, which is good. That's what you want. But you have all sorts of mining pools and farms and whoever that are also jumping in, because it's already like 1.5 to 2 gigahash per second. And you know, Monero is
the third largest POW coin in emissions in all this, in this entire space. So it's very much being mined right now.
Yep. It's one of the most popular things to mine right now.
So people are mining what? Bitcoin, Caspa, and ZEF?
Yeah, so that's how it goes. Bitcoin, Caspa, ZEF is the current breakdown of mined POW coins.
And this is also my assertion of why, like, you know, $1 to $3 billion market cap for this coin is almost pretty much baked in at this point. The network effect of all the miners knowing what ZEF is, and just the retail people that start developing a knowledge of what it is, the number of people who are incentivized to make YouTube videos like miners and stuff is really high. So because like all those miners who have a bag, they want it to go up, right? So they want it to go to $1,000 or whatever so they can sell. So the reality is like you've created a gigantic shill cartel. The odds of this going up are pretty much like guaranteed, assuming no other kind of consequences of the system, right? Like from a purely like marketing perspective, the odds of it going up in value are very, very high, I would say.
It's even higher than Caspa, because Caspa had GPUs and ASICs, and like you said, RandomX is CPU only. So you can at your network effect can grow 10x or 100x larger, because you don't have people that are with GPUs. You know, you're not GPU bound, is what I'm saying. Anybody with this, with a computer, can do this. Right, and everybody in the crowd, or a lot of people in the crowd, are mining.
We've been educating people. Much lower barrier to entry. You're not going to get beaten out by all the guys running ASIC, like 20k ASICs.
Exactly. Exactly. You can take like a Ryzen, you know, basic home computer Ryzen desktop processor and be profitable on this algorithm, which is unheard of right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's super cool. And final question, I know I'm kind of hogging the floor here a little bit, but what is the token holders look like? Like, how is the distribution? Is it mainly held by the devs, by the...
So right now, CoinGecko says that we have like 2.5 million coins on float. The emissions rate right now for mining is approximately like running like 8,000 coins a day or something like that. So it's a pretty sizable amount of like increase in coins per day. But that's expected, because like the mining difficulty was not very hard initially, and it's getting harder now. And then so inflation will get harder and harder to have happen the bigger the more expensive it becomes to run CPU mining. So the goal of mining, usually with RandomX, is not to get necessarily the most gigantic hash rate on the planet like Bitcoin. It's not necessary. You want to make it so that eventually the cost of mining gets to the point where it has an equilibrium where, you know, like there's a limit to the inflation rate based on that. And then the team has, I believe, like 500,000 coins, and they're going to use those to provide liquidity and do other things on exchanges and stuff like that, is what their play is. So the downside would be like, is it possible the team could sell some? Sure. Is it downside that people, they're going to use it for like liquidity purposes? Sure. But it's an understood downside in a sense. And if you look at the future market cap, which is going to be like closer to like 18 million or whatever, I would say like the relative amount is not that high, but the relative amount compared to the money on float right now is relatively high. But you can imagine like the devs aren't incentivized to sell their, you know, or use very much of that stash right now. Because like the market cap is so small, there's not liquidity to sort of exit any of that. So they're going to be looking for like billion plus market caps and stuff.
They get fees too. Like they get 5% of every block reward, and there's 2% of the stable conversion that they get paid fees on. And then to answer your question about the distribution of wallets, you can't see that. Like this is a privacy chain. So like you're not going to see how many wallets are created, who owns what coins. You're not going to see any of that, which I think is good because, in a way,
like if you think about it, like trust is about like what people believe the truth is, not necessarily what the actual truth is. And like people, when they get into a system, they'll say things like, oh, Satoshi has all these coins. Like what happens if he sells? The beautiful thing here is like, no matter how big of a whale it is, no matter who sells or who doesn't sell, no one really knows. So it's like, it's not an area where a lot of FUD is going to be generated every time someone sells something. And I think that's a really good thing. You don't want to have like a few whales sell and that caused some kind of panic selling or some kind of weird behavior that on-chain analysis allows. Whereas with this, you just don't know, which is good. Like it allows like for example, if you become a Zeph whale today and you know, you're a Mark Zuckerberg billionaire or some shit and you want to sell your coins, you could do so and you could sell some of them without, you know, moving the market or causing mass panic or some shit.
Right.
That's a good thing.
Nobody will do the thing where they look at like an ETH wallet that's been dead for six years and all of a sudden
funds.
Yeah.
Precisely. So you solve for that problem when it comes to privacy chains, which I think is a good thing.
Makes sense. Thanks, guys.
Yep, no problem. But yeah, I just picked up a miner. I just bought a new one. I ordered an AMD Ryzen 7950X. I calculated like the price per thread at about $17 on that one. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot between like the cost of all the other crap you have to buy, like the motherboard and this and that, and the price of the actual chip itself. If you want a computer that you can use otherwise, like, you know, now or in the future, and you want a really like top tier computer, I think that would be the one. The 7950X with a decent motherboard and stuff. You don't have to go the cheapest route. And you'll have a decent computer for yourself. If you want to do like bare bones, I think Up has stuff running it like on the 3000 series Ryzens and stuff. You can use those. But I think in the sweet spot in terms of like just mining efficiency plus a usable computer for long term, I think it's probably the 3790 if I had to guess right now, just based on what I've seen so far.
My main concern with the mining aspect of it is like I'm in New York City, so I'm not getting cheap power. I'm going to be paying like 18 or 19 cents per kilowatt hour for no matter what. So if I have something running.
I think it's still fine because like.
Yeah, it's still profitable, believe it or not, which is insane because like you said, usually that would kill your mining. Usually is all it's prohibited based on electricity. But this coin,
I think because you're getting into this so early. And I think that it's still valid to say that like even at those electricity rates, you're fine. I think the biggest expense is really the mining hardware itself. And if it's a computer you'd otherwise use in the next year or two, then if the mining becomes less profitable, then you don't have to write the computer off as some kind of loss or whatever. If you have no use for this computer in the future, the plus side is these AMD Ryzen. So like the 7950 is probably one you could readily sell. I don't think you'd have any problem like selling it for like, you know, 60% of its original price on the used market, which is a nice thing to have as well. So you don't have to make that much off of it to sort of break even, I would say, if you intend.
Yeah, they're widely used for like AI and for content creators, streamers, gamers. They're widely used. This is a better processor to buy than like a cheaper, like smaller one, because in like Steffi said, in the future, you'll be able to sell it.
Yeah. And based on market caps and stuff, you could, I'm planning not for like, I don't really care what the price of Zeph is now. I'm planning for what it is going to be like with a proof of work chain like this, like a target price is in the 500 to 1000 range for the coin or not unheard of at all. And I think just based on sort of the buzz generated by this particular one, which has exceeded many proof of work chains outside of Caspa so far, but this is newer. I think my interpretation, and again, it's like not financial advice or whatever, but my interpretation is that the coin price will be much higher, and therefore I'll be able to sell the coins at a substantially higher value than what I'm mining them for, or the cost of the PC or whatever. So like I'm hoping to like exit, like maybe some of the price of the like maybe like when it's like $10,000 that I've mined, whereas the PC itself plus power might be like, you know, $1,500 or something like that. Right. So like I'm looking at a much higher multiple by mining this is my theory. So anyway, it's a consideration.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. And
it's just a different risk profile, right? Like mining has like not as much risk to you except for the cost of a computer, essentially. So if someone wanted to sort of DCA into the thing, it's one way to do it.
Yeah, mining's like the cheapest way to DCA into anything. I was a Bitcoin miner for a long time. And so are people botting the arbitrage at all on the stablecoin?
I don't think they were before, but I believe they are now. Because what I've noticed is if you go look on, just type into CoinGecko, look at the chart for ZSD, mm-hmm. it's become much closer to a dollar now than it has ever been. So the more popular it becomes, the more our bots are going to start running, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it's definitely picked up already. So I'm not sure how much money there's going to be made in the future to like, if KuCoin gets it. KuCoin's got pretty decent gradients on their ARB bots. You could theoretically like get it on, if it's on something like that with a lot of liquidity, you could actually make pretty good money ARBing like ZSD, Tether, USDC, and like in a little bitty bot, like on really small increments. As long as the fees are low enough, you could make money on those theoretically in the future.
Makes sense.
Something to watch out for at least, but yeah.
It's just on Mex. Zeph's just on Mexi right now, right?
Mexi and a bunch of other little like renegade exchanges and like ZegEx, and I think ZegEx is the next largest one. And then like it's on TradeOgre and no KYC and stuff like that.
It just got listed on XT.com too. But yeah, Mexi has like 96% of the volume.
Yep, Mexi so far is the biggest exchange that has it.
Oh yeah, I just pulled up CoinGecko. 95% of the volume.
Yep. For now. And I know the team is working on some big listings, so as soon as they start listening, we'll have more opportunity at some larger exchange or some other larger exchanges. Mexita is like the sixth largest one though in terms of volume a day, so it definitely has enough volume there to like do what it needs to do for now.
Hey, I use Mexi a couple times a week. I'm a fan.
So you're familiar with the whole thing then?
Yeah, exactly.
Addy, did you have a question, or is like attitude?
Yeah. I just recently visited CoinMarketCap website, and it showed the DAP as self-reported circulating supply. And what is that? CoinMarketCap website. Hello?
What did you say about CoinMarketCap supply? It was breaking.
Yeah, if we visit the CoinMarketCap website, the DeFi protocol, it says the self-reported circulating supply. What is that?
Oh yeah, okay. So the what it's saying is that it's using the supply based on what's being reported from the protocol. The best place to look at the actual circulating supply would be the Explorer itself. Like the ZephyrProtocol.com has an Explorer, and if you look on it, it'll show you how many coins are in circulation.
Okay.
And right now, I can tell you really fast. I'll look it up. But I think last time I checked, it was like 2.3 or 4 million.
I think Gecko says 2.5 million right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably accurate. But yeah, Gecko is going to be a lot more accurate than CoinMarketCap in my experience in terms of like coins in circulation and market caps and all that kind of stuff. I know CoinGecko had Zeph. Probably 6 to 8 weeks before CoinMarketCap even listed it too. And they were both applied for at the same time, but CoinMarketCap likes to stop and view the roses on other stuff sometimes before they get their shit together.
Nice. I'm gonna tell you something. When the world starts to get really bad and these mugs out here robbing, you gonna love digital currency.
All these motherfuckers, they be running and gunning, and I'm all like, I'm sitting back just having fun in the sun, and then I'm like 1 out of 100, I'm just building abundance. The sum of everything we built during the last 100 upsets. You're getting salty, feeling faulty, you ain't no man. I keep robo here, grinning ear to ear, throwing up anarchy, smoking toiletries, spitting philosophies. Look at the dossier, we rack like geology. This lays to the shit like it's sedimentary. All these little onion peels getting torn off and buried. Imagine the smell. That shit is a vital experience. Without knowing how, you will not survive, period.
He's a fucking trip, man.
Jimmy, if you listen to this, right, you're getting absolutely fucking ripped to death, like on a spaceship for the life, you little troglodyte bastard. I hope you fucking listen, I hope you come to my house soon. I swear to God, man, I've got fucking loads of weapons and mad dogs, man. Nate, you're just a little laugh, man. Go on, fuck off, man. Go on, fuck off. Harmony, me and the other one, do you looking for a fucking job? You fucking idiot, you've just been fucking at the death. Fuck off.
Try to change the course of the portion philosophy. I'm just here for the corporation sponsor lobotomy. Feels like I won the lottery, like I'm ghost in this pottery. Chill, Demi, boy, the shit's supposed to be haunting. If it wasn't, ain't no puzzle, you would try to train your muscle. Airdropping like a fatal hustle, but the pay is bustin'. Think of all the loss accrued just to pick up off the tricky custom. Not the year, all those sub-downs would make up for something. I guess it just goes to show, the fuck do I know? At least it's quiet over here, I like my little silo. It's better than watching them fight over how to divide my time between sitting at the desk and the ride home. Devs at Mickey D's, they leeching off that Wi-Fi. Zapdos and Mole, they shipping more than five guys. Console open, waiting for the kamikaze. When the flash loans bang, they feeling like paparazzi. Snapshot motherfuckers. We got layers, meteor, jawbreaker. We cracking a lot of craters. We rapping a lot of pay dirt, maxing out relayers. Imagine the smell, $5 wrench to your Darth Vader.
It's really funny to us at Binance that everyone here is talking about blockchain attack. We know who all the validators are. We know where they live, and we're going to their house. We're going with a wrench, a big wrench, and we will attack them with the wrench, and then we will take their validator node physically and put it in a truck and drive it to China.
Right. So this is an extension of the activities you performed on BTC, right? Funding and creating these massive Bitcoin mines, putting them in caves, putting them in factories that were abandoned in the past, and also using electromagnetic pulse bombs to detonate the USA and the other country mines, right? So you're now applying this strategy to Lung in order to take over the chain, is that correct?
It's more simple. There's no EMP bomb. It's just a van of men in balaclava, and they have wrench, and they're taking the physical validators from people's houses. They are usually very fat, and they're usually in the shower with trying to wash their mice droppings off their clothes. So it's very simple. We just walk in and we take it. But if there is someone who is sitting at the computer or sleeping at the computer, we hit them with the wrench really, really hard. And then they say, stop. Don't do that again. And we say, that's okay. Just give us your validator node, and then they give it to us and we drive it to China.
China Spaces.